One of my great joys in life is having people over and introducing them to our creepy haunted basement. So if you've been over to our house and heard our basement lore stories, it does make me very excited. We live in a house that's about 100 years old, downtown Loveland. Love that space. But our basement is kind of creepy. It's kind of a basement, kind of a crawl space. Picture something halfway in between. At this point, I really don't like going down there because of all the cobwebs, so I sent Marshall down there. But when I first moved in, you know, we're putting away storage boxes. And down there, if you, like, go across the bottom and past this kind of crumbly brick wall, you find on the back, spray-painted in red, "I was alone." So that's why I'm like, this is our creepy basement. And we're like, what the heck? There's also some other like random stuff, like a jug of orange juice from the 70s and stuff that's way less creepy. But this idea of being alone, right? When we hear "I was alone," we immediately go to, "Ah, I don't want to be alone. That's scary. That's spooky. I will do everything in my power to avoid being alone." Often we're very scared of the silence that comes with it. And we live in a world where it's actually kind of hard to be alone, to avoid noise, to enter into a place of silence. You know, we've got our phones constantly buzzing. We've got advertisements playing at us. We're in the grocery store and you just hear music. Driving to church, we maybe turn on a podcast, turn on some music on our way down. We tend to avoid silence. I've noticed that there's been whole seasons of my life where I really hate driving. For the longest time, drove a 96 Subaru Outback with a broken cassette player. So there is like no music. I am alone with my thoughts when I am driving. I noticed that I hated falling asleep at night because no longer distracted on my phone or watching something, doing art. And in that silence, all my thoughts start to come up. All the things that I've been avoiding, thinking about, feeling during the day pop up. And I think that's when I notice, oh, I really hate driving, I really hate going to sleep, is usually a good indication that I need to slow down and spend some time in solitude. Because we're all being shaped, whether we realize it or not. We're all getting constant input on our life. I have to be careful about the TV shows that I watch, because if I watch something for too long, then I start talking that way. I'll adopt like accents and personalities. So we're all, whether or not we realize it, being shaped, being formed by the people around us, the messages that we hear, all the different inputs. So we are in our series right now, But How, where we're looking at different spiritual practices and trying to figure out, okay, how do we take these things that are shaping us and press in to becoming more like Jesus? Not more like the world, but more like Jesus. We want to hang out with him. We want to spend time with him. We want to become more like him. And then we want to do the things that he did. So spiritual practices are simply a rhythm that empowers us to bring all of who we are in front of God. And that means identifying certain areas of our life that we would like to grow into. So before we dive any further into this morning, I'd encourage you to spend a little bit of time asking this question. What breakthrough do I want to experience? What breakthrough do I want to experience? Or how do I want to encounter God? And this is a different question than asking, what do I want to do? Because I think we can come up with a lot of answers to what do I want to do, right? I want to pray more. I want to fast. I want to spend 45 minutes in solitude. But maybe those aren't the things that are going to lead me to the breakthrough that I desire, that I long to encounter. And so it's the breakthrough that's going to lead me to who I want to be. And it's the practices, these spiritual practices that we're learning, that are going to get us there. Does that make sense? Breakthrough. Who do I want to be? And then this is the how we get there. So maybe your breakthrough right now is, you know, maybe you really resonated with that, laying in bed and your thoughts are popping up. Maybe you're realizing, wow, I have a lot of anxiety in my life. I have a lot of stress the moment I start to slow down. And so maybe the breakthrough that you need to encounter is God's peace. You need to feel his peace, his stillness in your life. And breakthrough keeps us on this life-giving path. I know sometimes we hear spiritual practices, or they're often called spiritual disciplines, and maybe we think of like bad associations that we've had with it, and maybe churches in the past or our family growing up, where these things became very legalistic. You were in trouble for not doing something, or felt a lot of shame about not doing something enough, right? So we struggle with maybe some of the baggage, or we even turn it into a rule for ourselves. But seeing breakthrough in God propels us forward. Kind of keeping our eye on who I want to become, not the this is just another checklist item, keeps us on that life-giving path. And I think staying connected with our motivation, our purpose, also keeps us from falling to the ditch of like apathy. Just, oh, that sounds great for someone else. Something, you know, I don't know that we give enough thought to, is that we're like one of the first generations followers of Jesus to do this in a digital age. So how does that change our particular challenges? I wonder if the greatest threat to the Christian faith today isn't like secularism, but what if it's distraction? We live in an era where it's possible to go throughout our entire life and never really be alone. Sure, we might be alone in a room, but we're online, we're on social media, we're chatting with people, we're seeing the news. Even when we're alone, sometimes we're not. And I would suggest that maybe the breakthrough a lot of us need in our lives is a breakthrough in our constantly being distracted. So what does that look like? Let's read Luke 5:15 together. And it says, "But the news about him, Jesus, spread even more, and large crowds were gathered together to hear him and to be healed of their illnesses. Yet Jesus himself frequently withdrew to the wilderness and prayed." So I'm going to focus this morning on this idea of frequent withdrawing. So the word wilderness here is the Greek word eremos, but this can also be translated the desert, the deserted place, the desolate place, the solitary place, or even the quiet place. And if we look at the life of Jesus, and again, we want to spend time with him, we want to learn what he does, we want to become like him, and then do what he did, right? If we look at his life, we see this constant rhythm of retreat and return. He goes off into the wilderness, he retreats, he spends time in prayer and solitude, and then he comes back and he pours out. Retreat, return. Now, I think most of us kind of get this sense of like community is important, right? We have this something inside of us that longs for connection with other people. I think the thing less of us are in tuned with is our innate need for solitude as well. Many of us try to avoid that at all costs. But we need both. Just as Jesus retreated and returned, we need solitude and we need community. And Marshall's going to be teaching about community, is it next week? I think next week. So these are kind of the two like big buckets that a lot of these other practices fall into. So a lot of things require solitude in order to practice. And a lot of these things we can practice in community as well. So We're drawn to solitude like we're drawn to community. But I think we're also pretty darn scared of solitude. Maybe you're hearing me just bringing up the idea of solitude, and you're already starting to build your defense in your brain, where you're like, yeah, that's great for other people, but I don't need to do that. Oh, so-and-so really should listen to this message right now. Or, well, you know, I don't know. That's not really for me, right? This message is for you. If Jesus needed to regularly slip away, if Jesus regularly needed time in solitude, I think we need it. I don't know that I can say I'm more spiritual or better than Jesus, right? Like, if he needs it, oh man, I really need it then. So we're trying to find this rhythm of away and back and wrestle with the fact that it's for us. And I think one of the things I struggle with is like, oh, I don't want to become this weird hermit spiritual person that's like always away from people. And I don't know, I just get this weird picture in my mind of solitude. Oh, well, I don't know. It feels uncomfortable to distance myself if people can't find me and it's, oh, I've, you know, she's gotten some time away to pray. It's like, oh, I don't want them to build me up as this like weird spiritual person that's like hard to access or hard to relate to. And I noticed in that feeling of, oh, I don't want to be this weird spiritual person, this weird guru on top of a mountain, that there's some part of myself that needs to die. That's my ego getting in the way. That's my need for people to see me a certain way, see me as good, or at least, you know, I won't even take good. I just don't want people to view me as bad or awkward or weird, right? And I need to let that die. If I really want to become like Jesus, this is one of the things that he did. And if somebody thinks I'm weird, I'm going to have to get used to that. Let it roll right off my skin, right? So do we want to be made new and like Jesus? If so, we're going to have to lean into some solitude. Now, I want to clarify what solitude is and isn't. So let's first talk about what solitude is not, because I think we'll get stuck if we kind of come in with our preconceived notions. So solitude is not loneliness. So loneliness is this like felt absence. We notice something is gone. I'm going to ask you to totally change your reference, your worldview here. But solitude is a felt presence. Loneliness is absence. Solitude is presence. We're spending time in the presence of God. And in the quiet, we can meet with him. Second, it's not isolation. Isolation, again, is this movement away from relationship. And solitude is a movement towards relationship. I think of all three of these as kind of things that are like imposed on us. So loneliness and isolation, right? We don't often choose those things, but solitude is something that we choose. We're empowered to do it. And the last one is aloneness. Aloneness is, if you identify as an introvert at all, the thing that we love. It's being by yourself, but still probably reading a book or doing art, playing music, watching something on TV, right? That's being alone, spending some good alone time. Again, if you're an introvert, charging your battery that way. But we're not really in solitude when we're doing that. Solitude is not aloneness. So what is it? We said a lot about what it isn't. Very simply, practice of solitude is intentional time in the quiet with ourselves and with God. Again, we're not retreating, we're entering into the presence of God. Ruth Haley Barton, the author, writes, solitude at its most basic and profound level is simply an opportunity to be ourselves with God. So that's why I said it's not aloneness, right? It's being with God. One way of thinking about solitude is that it's a place that's free of all inputs. So if you're thinking about, I'm going to go enter time of solitude, that means not listening to a podcast. That means not listening to worship music. And I know I love spending time by myself listening to worship music. That's a great thing. That's not something we need to like banish from our lives completely. What I'm saying is it is different from solitude. So that means turning off your phone, putting it far away, not listening to anything in your earbuds. I would say even not reading a book. No inputs. You've cut all the input. The only input that you have is what's stirred up in your heart and what God's speaking to us. Now, as we enter into solitude, we find that there's two things that often accompany it. It's kind of hard to do solitude without these two companions. We have silence and stillness. So silence, yeah, it's silence. You did great. But there's also like these two elements to silence. There's this like external, this outer silence. So as we said, like all the notifications coming in from our phone, all the music that we're listening to, the movies that we're watching, just the noise around us. But then there's also inner silence. So when we enter into a time of solitude, that's not really the time to sit and go, okay, what do I need to get done this week? Okay, I need to remember to add this to the grocery list. Okay, and oh, right, that reminds me, I need to text back this person. And oh, yes, okay, there's that project. Okay, I should come up with like some list of everything I need to get done for that, right? Like we're not building our to-do list in our time of solitude. I love daydreaming. That's something that I have to fight constantly as I come up with these like big ornate scenarios in my head. But no, it's inner silence, pushing some of those things out of the way. And this solitude, this silence, leads to a stillness. And stillness is simply waiting for God, waiting to hear him, waiting to encounter his presence. I think about the days that Marshall and I spend together where we're working an event or just, it's been a very social day. He's been out at work. I've been at work. We come home. We lead a small group. And by the end of the day, I am just like so hungry, so ready for our nightly debrief where I'm like, finally, I get to spend some time with Marshall. I get to fill him in on my day. I get to tell him about all the stuff that I couldn't talk to him about before because we were just busy or there were people around, there are things happening. And so the more intimate a relationship, the more we need that like alone time together, right? Time where we're spending intentional quality time with one another. So as we grow closer to God, I'm going to kind of hint at something later on, we might find that that hunger stirs a little bit more. But if you're interested in a relationship with God and you're like, I don't know, he just doesn't feel that close. Well, have you been spending time with him? Have you been setting aside time in your day to just sit in his presence, to have conversations with him? Now, again, I don't want to turn this into like a legalistic thing. I don't want you to be sitting here like, wow, I don't do that. I guess I'm a terrible person and a horrible Christian and I just feel so much shame. Not what I'm saying, right? So if you notice that voice of shame already cropping up in your head going like, we don't do that, just go ahead, push the shame aside. Jesus doesn't actually command us to do solitude. He doesn't really command us to do really any of these spiritual practices. But what he does tell us is follow me. And again, earlier we said he lives this as part of his everyday life. It's part of his rhythm. It's not just a to-do list item. It's an extension of who he is. It's just what he does. So if we're invited to become like Jesus, to follow him, we're going to want to lean into this. We're going to want to learn how to do solitude. So that's why earlier I mentioned breakthrough question, right? Because when we're asking the question of what we want to receive breakthrough in, we're saying, this is who I want to be. This is what I want to become. This is what I want to do. And so it helps keep us grounded and not, this is a stick to hit you over the head with. But this is who I want to be. This is my motivation for heading that direction. So let's talk a little bit more about what solitude is. It's also a place of encounter. So I already mentioned that earlier, right? We experience the presence of God there. And so it is an absence because we lose all other input, but it's also the presence of God. Now, again, we probably notice some stirring up in us when we think about solitude. And that's because for now, maybe for a lot of us, solitude isn't exactly a day at the spa. It's not a place of rest for us. Instead, and again, I ask you to kind of change your perspective on this a little bit. It's a place of encounter, and in the presence of God, we can expect transformation. So it's a place of encounter, it's a place of transformation. So solitude, it's a path to God in so many ways, but it's not always an easy path. Again, we feel that like, that's for someone else, not for me. But we have to face ourselves as well. Because when we're quiet, all of our thoughts come up. So one of the first things that if you just said, okay, I'm going to start practicing solitude today, one of the first things that you will encounter is yourself. So we have to encounter ourselves in this place. I think a lot of us are used to learning like via addition. We're used to getting input. We're used to hearing a new sermon, and that's how we learn these new ideas, and we read books that fill us with knowledge. Learning through subtraction is something that's kind of foreign to a lot of us. This is a way that we can learn more about ourselves, is by pulling away all the other layers and looking inwards. Now, when we look inwards, again, we probably feel a lot of different emotions coming up to the surface because there's stuff that's just kind of been buried under there, tucked into a box and put away under the bed of our soul, right? We don't really know what's in us until we take time to slow down and take a peek. Just so you don't feel shame again, if you encounter some of these emotions, just know that you are very normal, you are very human. But one of the first things that will come up when we're in solitude is exhaustion. So anyone just been going and the first time you slow down and you don't have any input, you're just like, I'm so tired. I've found that there are many times, or poor Marshall will check in with me a lot and he's like, what are you thinking? I'm like, I'm tired. That's it. That's the thought. I have no capacity, no more energy to think about anything other than I'm tired, kind of on repeat. I'm just so exhausted. I am so tired. It's often the first thing we feel. It's like this crash when we've just been running so hard and all of a sudden that adrenaline we become aware of, it goes out. We feel this just like down deep weariness. Another feeling, as we keep kind of sifting through things, is maybe some fear. Like I mentioned earlier, there's that anxiety. I can't stop my racing thoughts. I find that I'm trying to be still, I'm trying to be quiet, but really it's just turned into like worrying in God's general direction. I'm kind of worried about these things. Going from what if to what if to what if. All of the things that we're stressing about suddenly come like assaulting our thoughts. Keep digging a little deeper. Probably find some sadness in there. So much of life, even some good things, comes with some sorrow. It's a hard thing to sit and to touch our grief. Another emotion, we just keep digging. Maybe we feel some anger. all of a sudden we're playing through all the wrongs that somebody did to us. Hey, that thing they did was not cool, and I am mad about it. Or maybe you're like me and playing through, oh, here's what I should have said to them. I have the perfect retort now. So if I ever find something like that, I'll be ready this time, right? We come up with these different scenarios, rehearsing them. Often anger comes up. And finally, dig down through all of that. Often we'll find shame. Because when we're just so exposed, when we're so vulnerable, when we've stripped everything else away, you have to wrestle with, do I really like myself? Do I really feel comfortable bringing the real me, the authentic me, before God? I don't know. Do I feel comfortable? Do I feel safe doing that? Often we kind of hide. We might even be able to hide from ourselves. But in that space of being totally stripped down, we often feel a profound sense of just how broken we are. Just how desperately in need of salvation we are. So one word that I could use to sum up all of these different emotions is simply pain. In solitude, we encounter our pain. We all have pain that we carry in our body. And when we're in solitude, what's down comes up. So when you slow down this unprocessed, raw, kind of all over the place parts of your soul rise to the surface, it's hard. And that's where we're going to end it today. No, I'm just kidding. Because the good news is, I'm sure you're thinking like, okay, this sounds awful. Why would I ever want to do solitude if it means wrestling with all this stuff? Well, all this stuff that's in us, whether we're aware of it or not, is leaking out. Even if we're not dealing with it, the people around us are. It's slowly leaking out, our anxiety, our stress, our sadness, our anger. It's affecting often those that we love the most, those around us. And so we have to face our pain. If we want to experience healing, if we want to experience freedom, we've got to go down. Now, this doesn't mean down and stuck, right? Good news is, it's a place of encounter. In there, we meet God. So it's kind of this, we're going down, and then through Jesus, we're coming back up. So let's look at how we face this pain together. In Matthew 26, this is where Jesus is about to be betrayed. Before his crucifixion, he knows what's coming, and he spends some time in retreat, right? He gets away. So it says, then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to the disciples, sit here while I go over there and pray. He took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, became anguished and distressed. Then he said to them, my soul is deeply grieved, even to the point of death. Remain here and stay awake with me. Going a little further, he threw himself down with his face to the ground and prayed, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will. So notice that Jesus doesn't start solitude and immediately feel peace and immediately feel like, I can do this, right? He enters solitude and immediately feels distress and anguish. He encounters those emotions. Have you, any of you felt like that level of anguish? I know there have been several times where I've been laying in bed and I'm like, it's not that I like actually want to die, but there are times where I'm like, I just want to get away from this. And if that means like there have been times where I've been thinking like, man, I just feel so overwhelmed I want to die because I just don't want to deal with any of this. It's like crushing, pushing in. Jesus was overwhelmed to the point of death. He meets you in that place. You're not alone. But Jesus goes to this place of pain. He doesn't distract himself from his pain. He doesn't say, oh, let's do a Bible study so that I don't have to think about this, right? Instead, he meets God in his pain. And he does three really interesting things I want to pull out. First, he gives God his feelings. My soul is overwhelmed to the point of death. He just tells God how it is. If you read through the Psalms, wow, if you are ever feeling sorrowful, full of grief, I encourage you to read through the Psalms because they are full of lament. They are full of sorrow. I think sometimes we find it really hard to pray because it's kind of boring. Also, I think it's because we're not being real. We're not being authentic. It's hard to pray because we're going to God with this polished version of ourselves. We're coming before him with, well, here's what I think is like appropriate to say and to ask for. What would it look like to just come to God and be like, this is what I'm feeling. I'm not going to judge how I'm feeling. This is me. This is me at my rawest. This is what I'm experiencing. Just laid bare before God in lament. Then the next thing he does is he gives God his desires. He says, if it's possible, take this cup from me. If it's possible, I don't want to go die on a cross. I don't want to go through all this suffering. And again, I think sometimes we self-edit. We run through our desires and go like, I don't know, is that okay? Is that like the most holy desire we have? Sometimes it's okay to just bring this before God and be honest about what's in your soul. No filter, just here's what I long for. And then our third piece is in the midst of those desires, we surrender. We give him our trust. We say, okay, but not my will, but yours be done. So this is a pattern that's laid down by Jesus. He brings God his suffering. He gives God his desire. And then he surrenders and says, but your will be done. And I think this is the pattern that we're invited to step into as well. As we meet God in our pain, as we surrender and let go of control, we'll meet him and his healing. Again, there's power in the presence of God. In the midst of all that inner chaos, we can begin to find peace. Again, the invitation of Jesus is not to just go like avoid our place of pain. It's not to just sit and stew in it, but it's to go down and meet God there, to meet him in this presence. So we've kind of covered with, wow, language is hard, words are hard. We covered the encounter of ourself. Another thing we can expect to encounter is the enemy. So in Matthew 4, it says, Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. After he fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was famished. The tempter came and said to him, if you are the Son of God, command these stones to become bread. But he answered, it is written, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Then the devil took him to the holy city, had him stand on the highest point of the temple, and said to him, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you. And with their hands they will lift you up so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. Jesus said to him, once again, it is written, you are not to put the Lord your God to the test. Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their grandeur. He said to him, I will give you all of these things if you throw yourself to the ground and worship me. Then Jesus said to him, go away, Satan, for it is written, you are to worship the Lord your God and serve only him. Then the devil left him, and angels came and began ministering to his needs. Now, I think there's a lot that we can pull out of this. But the thing that I want to focus on, and this is something that John Mark Comer points out, and in reading it was like, oh, wow, yeah, that absolutely challenges the way I see this. So he pointed out, he kind of read this story and found it very confusing, and I feel that too sometimes. He viewed it as a, like, the devil was coming to tempt Jesus at his weakest moment. He's been alone for 40 days. He's starving. not operating out of his best. And in his weakness, the devil showed up and was going to tempt him. But this is a really backwards way of thinking about it. Instead, this quiet place, this place of desert and retreat, of solitude, isn't a place of weakness. It's a place of strength. After 40 days of fasting, of being in solitude with God, he is like at the height of his spiritual like fullness, right? He's been pouring in, he's been getting poured into by God. We see it as weakness, but no, he's been like charging up. And so he's encountering the devil at his strongest. And I think this is like not how most of us think about solitude. We don't really picture solitude as a place that we go to draw on God's power. But it's how the followers, early followers of Jesus, would have thought about solitude. And so is this how you think about solitude, silence and stillness? I'm guessing like one of the reasons that we try this, maybe do it for a couple minutes or a couple days, is that, again, we're expecting that like spa retreat. We're not going into it expecting to fight a war. We're not going into it expecting to encounter opposition. So when you go into solitude, you encounter these kind of three enemies of the soul. You encounter the world, the flesh, and the devil. But in the midst of it, we again have the example of Jesus to draw on. I think it's really easy for us to read this passage and picture like a superhero movie that we've seen, and Jesus is like battling the devil and they're having it out. But really, this is like a conversation in his mind, right? I think often we're like, well, I'm not having this big epic battle. It's just all these thoughts are peppering me. Yes, exactly. That's how the enemy's going to go after you, is like he's going to attack our minds. But Jesus didn't get like sucked into a debate. He didn't get sucked into a fight. Instead, he constantly changes direction to what? To scripture. Instead of being baited by the devil, he says, here's scripture. Here's what I know is true. So in solitude, we get a little distance from the world. We begin to see clearly the things that our heart craves. And we find temptation in that. But we also find that we can rely on Jesus within. Our job is to persevere until the voice of the enemy is defeated by the voice of God. And then the last encounter that we find is an encounter with our God. Like I said, we're pouring deep into our emotions to find God. And then we're going through this battle and staying firm on scripture, staying rooted in God. So in Mark chapter 1, Jesus gets up early in the morning when it's still very dark, and he departs. He went out to a deserted place, and there he spent time in prayer. Simon and his companions searched for him. When they found him, they said, "Everyone is looking for you." He replied, "Let us go elsewhere into the surrounding villages so that I can preach there too. For that is what I came out here to do." So he went into all of Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and casting out demons. So in context here, Jesus is coming off of like this marathon of teaching in the synagogue, healing the sick, casting out demons late into the night. And I don't know about you, but if I have a full day of like ministry and doing stuff and hanging out with people, I want to sleep in the next morning. I'm like, I earned a break. I am just going to, yeah, sleep in, kind of veg out a little bit. But Jesus does something very different. He gets up early and he goes into solitude. He spends time with God. And in this place, he really finds his calling and his identity. When we spend time in solitude, when we spend time in God's presence, he has an opportunity to pour into us an assurance of our identity and our calling. He says, "This is what I came out here to do. I came out here to preach. I came out here to heal." And so, in this place of solitude, as we're encountering our God, he can transform our identity, the way that we see ourselves, and he can make clear our calling. I think often our calling is defined by other people. I need this, or, oh, hey, you're good at this. And sometimes it's helpful to have people pour into us and say, here's what I see God doing in you. But I think we also need to retreat and look within to see what God is doing us, in us, what he's calling us to do. Identity and calling. This is why we need solitude more now than ever. But we have to listen carefully. And that verse of Elijah looking for God, right? He's not in the wind or the earthquake or in the fire, but in the still, small voice. It could be so hard to dial in to that still, small voice. Again, we're one of the first generations to follow Jesus with a smartphone in our pocket. The first to sort out how we're going to pray and become like him in a digital world. How to hear God's voice when every time we open our phone, there's a million other voices screaming at us. But the same Spirit who met Jesus in the wilderness wants to meet you. Do you desire to encounter God and say yes to Jesus? Your invitation is to solitude, silence, and stillness, and to follow him into the quiet. That's great, Marissa, but how? All right, thanks. Yeah, that was good job. So how do we do that? I realize that I'm going late, so I'll keep this somewhat brief. Like, they're really simple ideas that are hard to practice. So the first thing is just to start small. Don't try to go out tomorrow and do like a 45-minute session of solitude. You will most likely hate it. This is something we can ease into, right? So spend maybe 5 minutes a day. Do it first thing in the morning. Let God be the first thing you encounter at the day. Let his voice be the first one you hear at the start of your day. So start small. Start with 5 minutes. Heck, if you can do a minute, that's a win, right? Like, start small. Start with what you would want to continue doing. Don't want to burn yourself out right at the beginning. Second thing is to find your quiet place. So we talk about like the desert, the wilderness, right? And so maybe it's not feasible for all of us to wander off into a desert. Maybe you're like, I have kids that will, mom, right? Like, maybe it's really hard for you to get away. But we can find moments. What would it look like if you showed up to church and just sat in your car for 5 minutes without the radio on, without a podcast playing, just 5 minutes before you came in and said, okay, God, what are we going to do? And just listened before you came in. So that can be, your quiet place can be like a comfy chair. It can be a walk that you go on to work or around the block. It can be in the car before you come. It's going to take practice. We want to practice silence and stillness. So again, remember, we want to turn off that exterior noise and we want to turn off that interior noise. And the last practical step is that we can expect resistance. So often, I'm like, okay, I'm going to practice solitude today. And it's going to be so good. And then, like, everything that can go wrong feels like it's going wrong. We're getting emergency phone calls, like random things in our house are breaking down. Like when we had our dog, she would like inevitably have a seizure that day. Like, stuff just happens. And I think we can almost like plan on that happening. But in the midst of it, we know that Jesus is greater. Sometimes it's not, you know, it can be hard to parse out, okay, what's the enemy? What's just coincidence? What's resistance in my own heart? But be aware that there's often going to be resistance that happens. So dig in. Remember, solitude is a battle that leads to freedom. And then the last thing is simply to stay with it. It's a rhythm. It's not a one-time event. Again, if you're expecting to spend 2 minutes in solitude and walk away feeling like, oh, what a lovely, refreshing day at the spa, you might not experience that. It's something that we experience day after day, that rhythm of retreat and return. It's not just something we do, but the space that we become like Jesus, that we spend with him. So this morning, I'm not going to ask the band to come back up, as wonderful as they are, because, yes, I'm so sorry, the moment you've all been dreading and looking forward to is we're going to spend some time in silence. We're going to spend some time in solitude. And I will have a timer going up here. Don't worry, I won't leave you abandoned for the rest of the morning. But let's see what God stirs up in us. Because again, many of us fear the quiet. We may fear being alone, might be terrified of what's under the surface, what can come up. But to quote Jesus, the phrase he often said, "Do not be afraid." What you find waiting for you in the dark of your soul is often love, is often Jesus' compassion for you. He's waiting. He's there, ready to welcome you, heal you, comfort you, offer whatever it is that you need to experience. So do not be afraid. Jesus is going to be waiting for you in the quiet.